hard to stop our conversation, but let's come back into the large group now. That always works, right? Works for all those school teachers. I know you're having some good conversation. I always hate to stop that. And yet at the same time, we want to do a couple more things before we go on today. One of the things that I didn't mention earlier, and I want to make sure that we do talk about, is how to self-soothe yourself. And that is important when it comes to fear and anxiety, is that we have to learn to deliberately do things that help us to calm down. And a lot of times that's in the area of our five senses. So I thought we would help each other by coming up with some strategies. Okay, in the area of touch, what are some things that are soothing and calming to your soul or your spirit? Just call it out wherever you are. Okay. Okay, let's do them a little bit slower so that everybody hears. Hot baths, pets, what else? Showers, hugs, massage, anything else? Cozy blankets,
exercising,
and just a nice warm hug from somebody, right? That always works. That may not sound like a self-soothe, but you can make that happen, right? If you have a willing person, you can get them involved in your self-soothing. Just be a little careful who you choose. Okay. How about in the area of tasting? Now, some of us may be self-soothing more than we should, like me. Sometimes this is an area of struggle around food and stuff like that. But there is meant to be a soothing in that. There is a God-ordained thing in our senses. So what about tasting? What's some particular taste that just tells you you're okay? Popcorn and what?
Chocolate.
Anything else? Cup of tea.
Wine.
Judy and I. A Diet Coke and a French dip sandwich for some reason has become our comfort food for over the years.
Having lunch with a friend.
I'm sorry. What did you say?
Diet Dr. Pepper and Cheetos.
Okay. Okay, all right. The possibilities are endless, right? Well, so obviously we want to make choices that work for our body, for our health, and all those types of things as we think about this area. But, you know, it is an area that God ordained and gave to us for soothing and for enjoyment, for bringing our mood back to a pleasure place. How about smell? What are some things that come in through that sense that are soothing? Lavender,
lilac,
rain,
jasmine,
baking cookies. That could satisfy two categories. Okay. Yeah. Is there another one? Someone?
Good earth tea.
Okay. I thought I heard one over there. So obviously we can go many directions. I can remember as a kid coming home from school, my mother baked bread on certain days of the week. I'm the youngest of 10 children, so you can imagine she baked a lot of bread. But I can remember as I opened the front door, I would just be happy if I smelled the aroma of bread baking, because it meant that she was busy, she was happy, she was going to include me in something, and she was going to give me something piping hot that just came out of the oven. And it was just kind of a fun, soothing memory to have. How about sight? When we are looking at things, sometimes that, you know, has pleasure and sometimes it doesn't. But what are some of the things that bring soothing to you through the area of sight?
Trees.
Nature. I'm sorry, I'm hearing on both sides. Your kids' faces. Oh, ocean and mountains, yes. I'm sorry, what?
A sleeping baby,
that'll do it for me too. Green space, okay. Well, I'm looking forward to getting on a plane this evening and going to see 3 of my 6 grandchildren, all of whom are under 5. And these 3 are, Judy told you that I remarried, and so I have the joy of having 2 extra children and 3 more grandchildren on that side, but these are my own sons and their children up in Seattle. So I have that feeling every time I just see them, you know, it's like, whoa, perfect. I'm calm. Okay, which baby do you want me to hold? But children have a way of doing that for those of us who are past the daily stuff, right? They don't always have that same effect on mom when she's been busy 24/7 with them, but your day will come when you will have all these fond things coming back. And hopefully some grandmother can give you, you could be a grandmother that gives a young mom a break, which is part of my joy. Hearing, that's our last sense here. What's soothing when it comes to your hearing? Favorite music? Classical, Mozart?
Chirpy
birds.
Oh, yeah. That's
my husband's keys in the front door. Oh. Does he realize that that is just a peaceful thing? That's a new one. I'm going to put that one on my list, the sound of my husband's keys in the door. Now, that could be stressful for some and calming for others.
You know? Nothing. I like nothing.
Nothing. Just that quiet, yes. This morning, I was quickly trying to gather things up, and I was thinking I needed to pack for the airport later, and I need to see a client, and I need to get over here and do this thing. And Dave had already gone into the shower, and I suddenly realized, like, what is so loud in this house? And I walked around, and I realized he had turned on a radio in every single room, but he was now in the shower. It was like, somebody give me peace and quiet, so I just went around pushing buttons. Because for me, the quiet, you know, I go right where you go on that. So anyway, these are all nice self-soothing things that we can do to calm our own mind and our bodies, because our bodies are connected to this whole deal of fear. There's also some interpersonal skills that we may not realize connect to fear, because if we have difficulty making requests, we might be afraid that people won't like me if I ask them to change what they do. We might wait too long to tell somebody that something's really bothering us. We might not know how to ask for what we want. If we have difficulty saying no, then we might have other kinds of problems, right? We might, again, be afraid people won't like me if I say no too much. Or we'll say yes too often, and then we'll get overstressed in our schedule and how many things we do, right? And so there's a lot of overwhelm a lot of times when people can't say no too well. So that's sort of a boundary area. We need to strengthen our boundaries so that we have a good yes and a good no, and we know where we're going to place them in our life. That will reduce some of your fear, your anxiety. Sometimes we've cultivated a too intense response. So think about it. Am I in a place where I give a too intense response, and that becomes an interpersonal issue for me? Do I demand that others do what I want? Do I frequently yell or raise my voice or use strong language to get what I want? If people say no to me, do I keep asking them until they say yes? When I say no, I often refuse adamantly and I don't budge. Those are the people that are kind of in the too intense category. We have others who live kind of in the not intense enough zone. And those folks will, you know, when I want to ask people for things, I hint or I avoid or I don't quite say it. And everybody's always trying to guess. What do they mean? I can see they want something, but I don't know what because they're not saying it. I can sometimes expect then, if I'm not intense enough, I may expect others to figure it out, to mind read. And as a result, I may find myself getting stressed and frustrated because they don't seem to get my hints. It's like, well, if they love me, they would know, right? Not so. So, and some people are just doing it because they're just timid and they just aren't really asserting themselves enough. They're not, I'm always saying when I'm talking with counselees, are you taking up the right amount of space in your relationships? Because there is a certain amount of space that you should be taking up. And for some, they're not taking up nearly enough. They're crowding themselves over in the corner, and that's why they're feeling all stressed out. They really need to move out and be half of that relationship. Or Others are very more in the demanding, too intense side, and they need to pull back a little. Make room for others, and you won't have as much stress. So those are just some skills that I wanted to add to what we said. They are not on your notes, but I hope you can benefit from that self-soothing and interpersonal skills. If you're looking for just a good workbook to work on some anxious behaviors, this is an excellent one, the Dialectical Behavior Therapy Skills Workbook. It's not for the therapist, it sounds like it, but it's not. It's more for you to just write out. And that little chart that you were working on, that came from this workbook. And the other book I referred to earlier is The Dance of Fear by Harriet Lerner. So now I want to just ask you, what questions are on your mind? And let's just bring them out here together for the time we have. And I will address them to the degree that I can. And if I can't, maybe we'll get you all involved in addressing them. But if you do have something on your mind that you were hoping to be able to ask, this is a good time. Yes?
I was just thinking as you talked about self-soothing, thing, but also and intensity. So my oldest daughter is very intense in how she experiences emotions. And so I just wonder if you have any advice for children, and like as moms, like what we can do to help our kids with their fears, or if there happen to be that more sensitive intense type.
Fear is something you cannot... You can't really talk people out of it, so you join them. You know, the more you try to talk a person out of their fears, the harder they'll cling. And especially the more intense people will really cling because they're intense enough to do so. You know, but so if you can kind of get down on their level, acknowledge them, and say, "Yeah, that was really scary, wasn't that?" You know, what do you need right now? Do you need to sit on mommy's lap? Do you want to get a drink of water? What do you need? Because that tells her, you get it, that she's fearful and the fear is okay. It's not that it's wrong that she had the fear. And then you can say, you know, well, let's go get one of your special animals. Maybe they'd like to sit with you. You know, that type of thing where you bring her into some modeling about how do you soothe yourself. Because your ultimate goal is that she can be able to do some of that for herself rather than take it from you. But initially, you join them in their fears. And that seems counterintuitive sometimes, because a lot of times you want to say, there's nothing to be afraid about, you know. And that won't work, by the way.
So, in essence, following up on Kim's question, instead of saying, what do you want, say, what do you need, perhaps?
Well, you could say that. It depends on the age of the child and their maturity, but you may need to suggest some things, because they may not be able to come up. But would you like a drink of water, or would you like to sit on mommy's lap? You know, that kind of choice thing. Because they're not going to necessarily create either of those options. They're going to whine, scream, hold onto your leg, do whatever they're doing. Yes, you create some soothing options that would be acceptable and that would actually let them know that you're acknowledging them. Because they're crying out for that acknowledgement. That's why they're being somewhat of a pain in the neck at the moment. So... Somebody else, question.
How do people, for some of us, there emerge like a pattern in terms of the, like, is there kind of like a reef theory sometimes for people in terms of it comes up and it gets manifest in these different, like, arenas, but at the base of it is like fundamentally afraid that I'm not good enough, or fundamentally
yes.
That the world is hostile and there's nothing I can do about it, or something.
Right. Yeah, there often is, and so that's a really good question. And that's part of why you want to sort out what's really going on inside of yourself. Because the closer you can get to that root fear, you may see that it somewhat generalizes over the landscape. It may show up here this way and over here a different way. You know, and one of the classics, well, the world is a hostile place is one of those. And that's often fed by the media and other things. So you may need to screen out a lot of that and reduce that input. If it's something more like your own adequacy, many people have a fear of I'm not enough. I'm just not enough for whatever. It doesn't matter. And they can put that into any situation. And so in some sense, you can look at that and say, well, is that true or is that false? Generally speaking, as human beings, I think we have that sense that we're not enough. I think there's a spiritual dynamic to that that maybe the world doesn't see. That we're intended to not walk alone. We're intended to walk hand in hand with God. And if we were hand in hand with God, we wouldn't have that feeling we're not enough. because we know he's enough. But when we step away from that attachment and that understanding on an emotional level, a lot of us as Christians have it in our heart. You know, we've accepted that truth, but we may not allow ourselves to experience that as an emotional reality. So it's that may mean that may lead you more to meditating on God's word or speaking with other Christians for encouragement or listening to Christian music if that puts truth in your heart and calms you. You know, there's a lot of ways you can speak to that feeling of not being enough or feeling alone in the world, those types of things. Other thoughts?
So I was just wondering,
what's
the name of the workbook?
Yeah, it had kind of a long, crazy name, huh? The Dialectical Behavior Therapy Skills Workbook for Anxiety. And that's just the top title. We won't worry about the subtitle because that'll lead you to it. The Dialectical Behavior Therapy Skills Workbook by Chapman, Gratz, and Tull. Gratz is G-R-A-T-Z, Tull, T-U-L-L. Just the title alone would get you to it if you're looking on Amazon or Kindle or someplace, you know, you'll find it. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm going to the doctor and I'm so worried. Like, what if maybe the doctor is going to say I have cancer? Or the elevator, maybe I will get stuck in this elevator.
Mm-hmm.
So everything, how do I do to not to think about future?
Yeah, I don't think if you're a future type thinker, it's going to be hard to not think about it. But what you have to do is learn to sort of peel yourself back off of it. You know, it's like your mind's going to go there. But you have to have a way to stop and say, okay, stop now. You're thinking about things that haven't actually happened, so let's think about today. Am I ill today? If I am ill, I probably should go to the doctor. If I'm not ill, I'm just getting a checkup. There's no bad news here. We're just checking up. We're just being a responsible adult. You know, you talk yourself down off of that feeling because the feeling has come through a habitual training of your brain. Our brains are very complicated and simple at the same time. They create pathways, neural pathways, every time we have a thought. So if we've been having a repetitive thought for a good portion of our life, there's a whole brain system created for that, you know? And so the only way that changes is you start to have a different thought and you rebut that original one and you go, yes, that's what I'm thinking, but that's only because I'm thinking about the future. I'm going to stay in the now. Staying in the now is such a good, healthy strategy. It addresses a lot of things in mental health and kind of psychological places that we get stuck. If we can stay in the now, it really reduces that fear factor and even works better for depression and other things.
I find that when I'm fearful or whatever, it's the thoughts, like you're saying, the neural pathways, because there's a whole study on recreating new pathways.
Sure.
And so what I do is I start thanking God for the blessings. I mean, I can have a whole neural pathway about my husband that would say, get out of here. But then I have to stop and think, you know what? Be thankful. He loves you. He's there. He provides for you. So counteracting that.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and we're talking like brain chemistry over here, like we're speaking of science, but the Lord's already told us that, right? Take captive those thoughts. You know, allow your mind to be renewed by His Word and by His Spirit. There's nothing new under the sun. We're just out there discovering it in science, that there's actually a reason to do that because it's going to change your mind. You do things differently, it will change your mind. If it changes your mind, it'll change your feelings. And then you have more to work with. You're not as trapped. And, you know, because I'm now older than I used to be. But I am not afraid to declare my age. I am 61. And being 61, I can see how many ways I let that limit me when I was younger. You know, it's like, I'm afraid of that, therefore. I just can't do that. Or I always think that way, so I guess I'm just one of those anticipatory anxiety people, and I'm never getting over that. Well, it's true that I am a person who anticipates a lot. That's actually a good skill. I could not do my work without it. But it can get in my way if I start worrying about little piddly things I can't change. You know, or if I start over describing my husband and what he ought to do or think, or how is it going to be in the future. You know, there's lots of ways you can get in trouble with things that are actually meant to be good. So those are ways to deconstruct and grow. Any other questions before we wrap up for today? Yeah.
I just had a comment. 2 years ago, I was going through a medical situation, and, you know, we didn't know the outcome. And the only reason I mentioned it was because it was the first time I absolutely knew I was in God's hands. But also at the same time was that I don't want to have to live through how difficult it could be.
Yes.
But I never had, before then, I never realized the peace of God. But then on a emotional level, just let this cup be passed from me, type of thing.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of interesting.
Right. And both of those are true at the same time, right? You know, if Jesus can pray, let this cup pass from me, we have every right to say that. You know, and a year or so ago, I had a sudden really difficult bout with pneumonia that was life-threatening. But I didn't really realize how serious it was to start with, and then it just got worse and worse and worse. And so I was in and out of the hospital twice over Christmas time. Totally freaked my husband out, because he was supposed to be the person who has surgery, not me. I wasn't supposed to go to the hospital in his mind, because I'm younger than he is, so he just kind of didn't have it there. But as I laid in the bed realizing that I was more helpless than I thought, that's when I had to deal with some of that. It was like, okay, my will says I want this, Lord, but maybe this is your will and this is your time. What if it's your time? Am I going to be okay with that? Am I going to walk into your presence on, you know, voluntarily? Or are you going to have to drag me into the kingdom? So... anyway, thankfully, God said, this is not your time. You're just thinking that way because you're an anticipator, and you always do that, right? But I did get better, and I was happy about that. But it reminded me of that when you said that, Kathy. Yeah. So we're getting close to the end, and I have brought a song that many of you might have heard before because it comes from Bonnie Knopf, and some of you are too young to have known who she was, and others know her well because she used to come down for our women's retreats. And I still have some of her music and find it to be soothing. It's one of those soothing for my soul things. But when she first wrote this song, it was the year of the great flood on the way to Mount Hermon. When we were worried about if women would ever get there. Does anybody remember that year? Okay, all right. There's a few of you who remember that year. And she was coming down from Portland to do our worship. And she said, I'm just going to write a song for the women of PBC. So this is a fear song for the women of PBC. How better to close than that? And just before we started, I wanted to show you my little cups because I had done them earlier and forgot to show you. Whenever you think about fear, there's usually some covering that's going to hide it from you if you let it. Maybe anger, irritability, withdrawal. There could be something else, tension, headache, a stomach ache, whatever. But check for that underneath. Ask yourself what you're afraid of. Because it's almost always, you know, this is the secondary emotion. You think it's the primary, but it's not. So just use that little visual to help yourself. So let's all be blessed by Bonnie, and then I'll close us in prayer, and we'll be done for the morning.